change. One of the things that Mary is experiencing over the past week is change. We've been experiencing in our life recently a lot of change. One of the things we tend to do with change is keep it from happening. But now, when we're in this circumstance of the coronavirus, one of the things we want is that to change so that we can get back to our life. But what we need to do is say, how are we going to learn from this experience that when it does change, because we know it will, that we can get back to the life God has given us through the resurrection of Jesus? Now, change is one of those things that happens all the time that we don't realize. We think about springtime where the trees are changing, the plants are changing, they're putting on greenery, but they're not the same plants, it's not the same greenery because they're not. The trees aren't taking up the old leaves and putting them back on. They're putting on new leaves. These trees are changing, even though you said, well, that tree was there last year. Yeah, it was, but it's different now. It's put on more limb. It's put on more leaf. It's different, even though it's the same thing. And that's the same thing with life. We as humans, tomorrow is going to be different because of our experience today. We're going to change because of what happens today. But we often think, no, I'm the same. It doesn't change. Yes, it changes all the time. And that's what we need to embrace because time marches on. This is the way God made it. But what happens is when we get trapped in our minds that we don't like change, we want it to be what it was. And sometimes those are positive thoughts. We want to hold on to those good experiences of the past and they slip through our fingers. Or it could be things from the past that continue to have a grip on us, that keep us from living well today because of the memories that seem to just hold on and penetrate how we act towards one another, how we treat ourselves. But God says there is a new day and that we can change. We don't have to let these things control us. We have to live for today. Learn from the experiences of the past. Accept the good things of the past, but let them go and let those memories last. But don't try to get stuck in the past and holding on to them because we can become so past-focused that we become hope-deprived. And hope is about looking forward. Hope is about something beyond the troubles of this world, how it can change in positive ways or how it changes in negative ways. And we see change happening all the time in our life, and Mary is finding this in herself. How does she make sense within her grief of what has just happened? Weeks or days earlier when she was with Jesus coming in and people are shouting, Hosanna, Hosanna to the highest, and everybody is celebrating, soon changes from kill him, crucify him. And how the whirlwind of her experience, how is she going to deal with all the hopes and dreams she had of who this Jesus is, what he claimed to be, and who she made him to be in her mind? How is his kingdom going to happen here on earth, and how was she going to be a part of it? We remember that Mary Magdalene was a woman who was controlled. Her past was controlling her through demons. That somehow, some way, Jesus came into her life and she was out of control, and Jesus gave her control back by healing her, taking away the things that were controlling her mind so that she could control it herself, bringing her life, bringing new experience, bringing her the life that God intended for her to have. And can you imagine being that woman who realized that this man could be Messiah, that you dedicate your whole life and your finances to his ministry? And then all of a sudden you find yourself standing at his tomb. How do you make sense of a world that he is supposed to live and to reign, but then you see him beaten and killed and mutilated before you? And as she watched him taken to the tomb, what is she thinking about her hopes and her dreams? What is she thinking about this man who is supposed to reign eternally? What is she thinking about this love that she had for him because he loved her and healed her? And as she's weeping by the tomb, she says, Why are you crying? Well, that's a silly question. The one that I trusted, the one that I love, the one whom I had hope is dead. Why shouldn't I cry? we ask, well, why is Mary there? Well, we know one reason she's there is because they didn't have time because of the Passover to traditionally bury him the way he was supposed to be anointed and to be wrapped. And she comes that first day of the week with some other women to give him a proper burial. But could there be more to that? Could it be that Mary is thinking about, if I can just be close to him, even though he's dead, I can still remember? Because there are people who do that too. They visit graves, and that's not a bad thing. But what's the point? To hold on to a person they can't hold on to anymore? To not be able to move on beyond this person's life and this person's passing? It's not bad to remember. It's not bad to grieve. It's not bad to express these things. But when they start to control you, when you're trying to pull back from the past, something that's just a memory, it diminishes hope. And here's the challenge that Mary has. Will she hope? Will she remember the promises that Jesus gave her? And will she trust in its fulfillment? Because that is hope. And if she doesn't remember what Jesus promised her, because many of the disciples had a problem with it. When Jesus told the disciples that he was going to die, Peter says, over my dead body. And Jesus says, no, it's going to be over mine. And he couldn't grasp it. It shouldn't happen that way. And he tried to keep Jesus from dying. And he says, get behind me, Satan. You don't have the things of God, but the things of Satan on your mind. Jesus had the mind of God. He knew what he had to go through. Things were going to change, and they had to change because that's why Jesus was here. Things had to change, and God knew it. But so often, we want to hold on and not let it change. But as she's weeping at the tomb, she sees a man and thinks it's a gardener and says, where have you put him? Not only is her Messiah dead, her Messiah is missing. Someone stole him. Where is he? So we can give him a proper burial. And she hears something. She hears something that identifies her humanity. She hears her name. Her name spoken by the one who spoke her existence into being. He calls her Mary. I just imagine in my mind as she's sitting there weeping and her eyes are filled with tears and just heaving with grief and hearing those words from that voice that sounds so familiar. I imagine her whipping around and saying, Rabboni, you're here. All the things that he had promised had come true. Her hope was realized. And she goes to him and throws her arms around him. And I would imagine, like any of us, if our loved one comes back from death, that you're going to want to hold on. And Jesus says, don't hold on. Could you imagine? What do you mean, don't hold on? You're back. You're here. Things that were will be again. He says, no. The things that were, were. Something better is on the way, and I need to go to the Father for that to fully take place. Because when I go to the Father, I will send the Spirit. The Spirit will come and reside in you. And through that Spirit, you will change the world. But the question is, will she obey? Will she love him enough to give up her will for his will? Because that's what love really is. C.S. Lewis talks about how love is an act of the will. It's not an act of emotion. Because it takes the will to love and to be in relationship with people when it's hard. It's easy when the emotions are fresh and you're filled with excitement. But it's hard when challenging times come. This love of seeking the will of someone else at your cost. And what he says is the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is pride. Because pride is about competition. Pride is about having my will be done, not someone else's will be done. But for you to fully love someone else, you give up your will, you give up your pride for their sake, for their good. And sometimes that's hard. And here is Jesus telling her, no, you have to let me go. You have to love me and let me go so that I can fulfill what you need. Will she love him and let him go? One of the things C.S. Lewis also says is this: pride is the greatest sin with the greatest misery. Because the world becomes focused around ourselves. And this is not what Jesus is exhibiting here. He's talking about a world that's focused around the people that are dying because of sin. He came to help them, to make them whole. And when he's going to the Garden of Gethsemane, he's understanding this battle. He takes his disciples along with him, Peter, James, and John. He says, wait here and pray so that you won't be tempted. I'm going a short way off and going to the Father. And as he's praying, he's in anguish. Things are difficult. And the scripture says in his anguish, he's sweating drops of blood. And in this spiritual battle, he's saying, God, if there's any way that you can change what's coming, please do it. But he always goes back to the will. Your will, not mine, is demonstrating the love of Christ for his Father. But he goes back to the disciples. He says, you're sleeping? Continue to pray so that you won't be tempted. And he goes back and he's in anguish still. And it says an angel comes to him to strengthen him. But what do we find? He's still in anguish. We think if God sends an angel, that everything's going to be fine and I won't be in anguish anymore. Jesus is still in anguish over this, even though the angel is supporting him emotionally, giving him strength that he might not even realize. We have to understand that when we are similarly afflicted like Jesus, when we're in anguish, doesn't mean that God has abandoned us. We might have angels there supporting us in the midst, and we still might be in anguish. But will we continue to commit ourselves to God's will? I was at the Abbey of Gethsemane, and in this forested area, they have the statues of these three people. And as I walked up this pathway, I see this statue. I go, what is that? And I come to realize it's Peter, James, and John sleeping there. And I look up the trail, and what do I see? I see a statue of Christ in anguish. And as I go up to that statue and look at him, he's crying out, Father, if there's any other way, because he knows what's in the balance is, if I do my will, his will won't be done in humanity's life, and eternity is ended. And as I sat there, and you can see back behind the statue, a little stone. I was sitting on that stone and praying. As I was looking at that statue, I was weeping. Because I realized he's doing this for me. And I don't think I deserve it. And I said, thank you for doing that for me. And the thing that came to my mind was Jesus saying to me, you're worth it. Oh, the tears flood. And you go, I'm worth it? I never feel like I'm worth it. I never feel like the price that you paid is going to take my sin away, because I don't think I'm worth it. But he says, I am worth it. And when he gives up his will for the Father's will, he's also giving up his life for my life, so that I can have the life he always intended for me. What a better act of love than that. And we see Jesus after this on the cross, and what does love exhibit? It's easy to love those who love you, he says in the Sermon on the Mount, but it's hard to love those who hate you. But on the cross, what do we see for Jesus? It's him fulfilling the Sermon on the Mount, where he says that I will love, that I will sacrifice, I will give my life for many, I will love my neighbor. But when he looks down at his neighbors that are right before him are all the people who want him dead. Loving your neighbor isn't just loving those who love you. Loving your neighbor means loving your enemy, seeking their best interest. And on the cross, Jesus is looking down at humanity who doesn't want anything to do with him. And he looks at them and tells the Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. So many times, we don't know what we're doing. We resist the change that God is trying to instill in us. But so many times we don't want to love someone who's not treating us the right way, or we think that their will should be our will. We want to impose our will on them. But God never does that. Even in the garden, God was not going to impose his will on Jesus. Jesus had to submit his will to the Father. And the same thing is for us too. Will we submit our will to him? Paul says in 2 Corinthians that we're jars of clay. He says that we're pressed, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but we're not in despair. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We're struck down, but we're not destroyed. So even though in this life all these things are happening and God isn't going to take it away and make it easy like we want it to be based on our will, but he allows these things to happen so that these jars of clay can demonstrate that they are filled with a glory that's not their own, that God chooses us to be filled with his Spirit so that we can share that with others, so others can see that they too are objects of God's love. In 2 Corinthians, he said, I believe, therefore I have spoken, since we have the same spirit of faith. We believe, and therefore we speak, because we trust in the promise. We trust in the hope, because we know it will be satisfied, because Jesus satisfied it coming out of the tomb. He gives us hope, because we know that the one who the Lord raised up from the dead, he will also raise us up with Jesus. With himself. All this is for our benefit, so that the grace that reaches more and more people may cause thanksgiving to overflow to the glory of God. And when we give our will over to the Father's will, glory takes place. Thanksgiving happens. And it's not just for ourselves, it's for others who can experience it also. He says, so therefore, because of this hope, we don't lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, we're changing. And we don't like it. We want to hold on to the past. But God says, no, don't worry about that. That's the natural process. Accept it. But what's not natural is that internally, because of the Father, you are being renewed day by day. That's his work, not ours. We just open ourselves up to it. In our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us eternal glory, which outweighs them all. And think of what Paul is talking about. He says, we're pressed, we're perplexed, we're persecuted, we're struck down. But in the midst of that, he says, but they're light and momentary troubles. So what do? We fix our eyes, our spiritual eyes, on what is unseen, not which is seen. Because oftentimes what is seen gets in the way of the hope and its fulfillment. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. It's long-lasting. So this hope in the next world, C.S. Lewis says, is a cause for us to act in this world. We see that there's a reason to act in this world in loving ways, to bring hope to people, to bring care to people, to sacrifice self for other people, because we know in doing that, we represent God to other people. And it all comes down to what Jesus understood when he's praying in the garden. That we have to understand too, that there's a cloud of witnesses who've given themselves over to the will of God. He says, let us throw off everything that hinders and entangles, the sin that is easily entangling us, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. That's not about staying in one place. That's about change. That's talking about movement. That's talking about future. We keep that focus. We consider him who endured opposition from sinful men so that we will not grow weary and lose heart. And here's Mary at the tomb. She's told to go. She's the first witness of the resurrection. And she goes and she witnesses to the disciples that he is risen. But the funny thing about it is, back in those times, a woman as a witness was not even accepted in the courts. But Jesus turns things upside down and he has this woman go as his first witness to the disciples. And they come back to the tomb and know that he is risen. And they will know very shortly when he appears to them again that he is alive. And their hope is not disappointed. And things have changed because the tomb is empty. And they will be changed because the tomb is empty if their will is given up for God's will. So Mary obeyed. She might have wanted to hold on to the past, but she had to let go of the past so she could grasp the future. These broken dreams brought to her a blessed reality. So our response to this is that of all people who are given this hope. We identify where our will is fighting God's will, so that we can be filled more with the witness of Christ. What needs to be released from the past so that we can embrace the present and the promised future? How can we live well in spite of the past and because of it? Knowing that I have a future that I'm journeying towards, and I'm going to let God and Christ be a part of that every day. And I'm going to allow His Spirit to guide me every day. Do you need to let go of trying to control situations and people and their will against their will, rather than allow them to be who they want to be while always trying to be a light to them and letting them to choose to either be drawn to you or repulsed by you? And how will you let the reality of Jesus' resurrection inspire your witness as salt and light into this world? Could you imagine when Mary came back to the disciples who were behind locked doors, just totally unraveled in their minds about what was going on? That life in grief is tasteless and it's dark. But here she comes as salt and light and says, "He's risen. He's alive. There is hope." And that's what I want to leave with you today, is that He is risen. He is alive. There is hope. In giving up your will for His will, you will have a life that you will never imagine you could have. And you will have influence in the world in a way that you couldn't imagine, because, like me, you don't think that you have much to offer. But God says, "Let me work in you, and you will be surprised what I can do with the gifts and the talents that I've given you." That is your challenge. That is your hope. And to Him is given all the glory. Let's sing.